It's my new obsession. Yeah, pink, it's not even a question. Pink on the lips of your lover. Cause pink is the love you discover.
Welcome to the Marilyn York Show. Warning, this program is not for the faint of heart. Listen at your own peril. If you have questions about marriage, relationships, or divorce, call 823-1920. And now, here's your host, Marilyn York.
Good morning. You're listening to Marilyn York. Welcome back, my little cowboys and cowgirls. It's rodeo season. And that means DUIs, let's be honest. I mean, come on. I know what goes on at the rodeo. Of course, some of those skanks act like they're drunk, I think, just to look easy, and they're actually completely sober. I hope not. Okay, we're talking about criminal law today. I have Tammy Riggs, who is a former prosecutor and private criminal defense attorney, in the studio. Welcome, Tammy.
Good morning.
We are going to talk about DUIs, among other things, domestic violence. There's certain areas that overlap in our practices, and I refer my business to her and Scott Freeman, and vice versa in the divorce arena. And a couple of those seem to be DUIs and domestic violence, sometimes child abuse allegations. Actual child abusers are not my clients. So typically it's a false allegation. I've had a lot of people call in the show, and also clients who are wrongfully accused of child abuse, either sexual or physical, and that seems to be a favorite ploy in the divorce arena. So we'll kind of touch on some of the actual real criminal sanctions and the definition of those things. If you guys want to call in today with your legal questions on the criminal arena or the divorce arena, the call-in number is 823-1920. As always, you can comment during the show on Facebook as well if you're afraid of revealing your identity to the prosecutors listening or your wife. Ha. Huh. Okay, so Tammy, you were formerly a prosecutor on the Domestic Violence Protection Team. What is the Domestic Violence Protection Team?
Well, the Domestic Violence Protection Team was a felony team at the Washoe County District Attorney's Office. And at the time that I was a prosecutor, the sexual assault cases, the child endangerment cases, anything having to do with domestic violence or a crime on a child was referred to the Domestic Violence Protection Team. Since that time, about 2 years ago, that team was disbanded, and now those cases go to the general felony teams.
One of those funding cuts, I presume.
Absolutely, yes. they lost a team chief position in the Washoe County funding cuts, and so they did lose that team.
That's unfortunate. And while I do represent men in the divorce arena, I am never, ever trying to say that, you know, women shouldn't be protected. And there are those men that do get abused. Typically, that is not the kind of case that would be prosecuted in the criminal arena, unfortunately, although maybe you've seen a few that are.
Yeah, actually, I have. I've actually prosecuted women for abuse. It's actually surprising. The statistics run about 20% women versus men.
I didn't realize it was that significant, although I know in my practice it's that significant. And I've certainly had my females charged with a particular domestic violence offense,
right?
You know, and the men often say, like, it didn't hurt, or it hurt. I'm not afraid for my life, but it isn't acceptable to be punched in the face, you know, by a woman and have men not, you know, respond.
Sure. But I think where people think where the difference is that I think that men are less likely to appear at their trial. So, you know, obviously if a prosecutor doesn't have a witness who is going to be testifying, then the case is more likely to be dismissed. I think that that's where the dichotomy comes from.
I'm sure it's embarrassing as a man to go in and say, you know, my wife punched me in the face and I didn't defend myself. But that is my advice to my clients. If you have a hitter for a wife, and we usually like yell it out in the office because we're retarded, we've got a hitter when we have a man that tells us like his wife's a hitter. And I always tell him the same thing: hands in the air, straight up, do not respond, do not defend yourself. If it's so violent that you can't get past her and leave the scene, or your kids are there and you don't want to leave them because she's drunk or something, then, you know, the minimum physical restraint required to keep her from gouging your eyes out.
Right. And if you can get yourself into an area of the house and close a door with the child and keep them safe, that's the best course of action. Because if you're talking about a he said, she said case, and that case actually does go to trial, it's true that the man is most likely to get prosecuted in that, or get convicted in that scenario. I have had, unfortunately, clients who were defending themselves but ended up sadly being convicted, because the judge, when they have to make a choice between male and female, I just think that that...
Well, the statute in the civil arena says primary aggressor, you know, sure. whoever the primary aggressor is, if mm-hmm. it's both directions, and it's always going to be the man because they're physically stronger, superior wise, because it basically all but says that in the statute, you know, who has the advantage in the fight. Well, it's the man, but he may not be using that advantage. And most of the time they aren't.
And that's true. And another misconception is that if you have a domestic battery that has actually occurred, there's going to be marks. Somebody's going to have a bruise or a scratch or slap marks, hand marks. And honestly, that usually doesn't occur. When you get a case, when those cases come into the DA's office, they usually don't have such evidence. And so that's where the judge has to decide who was the primary aggressor. And that's where that... where that comes in as far as, well, the man is bigger, so he must have been. It's an unfortunate situation, but my experience is that that's the way the judges usually come down if they have to pick.
Well, and men don't mark as well, let's be honest, because hair, they have more body hair, particularly on their face. If you slap a guy in the face, he's got that rougher, like more leathery skin from, you know, the hair follicles. Women have, I mean, my skin marks on a dime.
Right.
It's like blotchy and pale and there's no hair. And, you know, you breathe on me and I'm going to mark. Whereas, mm-hmm. you know, like my husband, you can't mark him if you tried, hardly. He never bruises. I bruise if the wind blows. So I think it depends on the skin.
Or another situation that comes up is women are with nails are likely to scratch, mm-hmm. and they'll scratch neck, scratch face, and then the prosecutor is going to argue that those are defensive wounds.
Always, and yes. the girls always say that. Well, I was defending
exactly.
myself because he called me fat. Or whatever started it. And I'm not saying there aren't men that go overboard. And that's kind of a power differential I was talking about with one of my therapist friends the other day, that men don't often realize that women know they're inferior physically. They are physically inferior in almost every instance. And therefore, we have a sort of fear instinct that kicks in that men don't realize, you know, where they intimidate us even verbally, even in the legal arena. We were talking about in the context of male attorneys being bullying with female attorneys,
right.
and them not realizing that we are, you know, physically inferior. And therefore have sort of an instinct kick in. If they get between us and the door and start yelling at us, you know, our hackles go up. You know, we're immediately like, uh-oh, are we in physical danger? When really it's like a legal argument. It's kind of unfortunate. And I by no means walk around feeling like a victim, but I'm also aware of this reality. I do get uncomfortable in those situations when I wish I didn't, but it's the truth. And so there is I guess I'd say validity to the difference between men and women in these situations, but I don't think it's applied appropriately in all instances.
No, absolutely not. And again, in those cases where a man might be accused of domestic battery, where the female is actually the initial aggressor, my experience is there's usually some sort of backstory, as you were alluding to earlier, some sort of pending divorce or custody hearing.
There's like a pattern too. I have these men that come in and they're like, this is her pattern. She wants to get a rise out of me. She's upset. She needs attention. You know, she'll do whatever she can to get the attention. And so she gets drunk. She starts provoking, accusing me of cheating or whatever their little, you know, red hot button is, and brings it up and brings it up and brings it up and uses the kids because they're home with the kids and she's drinking and he doesn't want to leave her alone drunk with the kids, or both of them are drunk is often the case, you know, and it just escalates, escalates, escalates. And finally a man loses his cool and pushes her against the wall to get past or holds her down on the bed when she's scratching his face off. And then she calls the police. And this has been going on for, say, you know, years. And he's mm-hmm. never responded physically. And then when he finally does, it's the perfect time for her to get a restraining order, get custody, get a domestic violence conviction, get the house, and kick him to the curb. So I'd say, honestly, like at least 50% of my cases have restraining orders. And it's less now. We've had sort of, I guess, probably a beneficial turn in the TPO system where they seem to be issued less. Maybe attorneys are advising people to use them as a tool less. I don't know. I've seen less of them lately, I'm thrilled to say, because they're pretty unfortunate. Let's talk about what the definition of domestic violence is, because I think that the listeners will be really surprised to hear how broad it is and all the things that fall into the category of domestic violence. Because I know my clients are always surprised to hear what falls into it for issuance of a restraining order. If you guys have some thoughts or feelings or stories you want to share with us, the call-in number is 823-1920. So Tammy, I guess it's chapter 33, which is 33.018 if people give a crap about the specifics, but the acts which constitute domestic violence I was kind of looking at today, What's the definition that makes it domestic as opposed to just beating up some kid at school? I mean, there has to be some familial relationship. What else?
Well, basically a living relationship or some sort of romantic relationship. You can be charged with domestic battery against a roommate. For instance, if somebody resides in your home, you can be charged for domestic violence if you are accused of battering a person that you used to be married to or that you used to live with, any sort of blood relationship. So you can be accused of domestic battery against a child or your girlfriend's child, for instance.
I was going to say, yeah, even a relation of the child to your significant other.
Yes.
And that does happen. Stepkids have conflicts with parents, you know, and it gets physical if they're teenagers, and that is domestic battery by definition if that occurs. I've had, because there's accumulation effect, right? You get one domestic battery charge and then another, and then there's a more significant penalty imposed.
Right. Enhancement, yes.
And I've had clients that have been convicted of domestic violence because they got in a fight with their brother or something years ago, or dad and, you know, son, or mom and daughter pushed or something. And then suddenly there's another one that's not at all related in a marital situation, and they enhance. And the court takes it very seriously as though there's this big pattern of abuse where you're beating women left and right. And in reality, it's like a dumb fight you got in with your brother in college.
Right.
It's sad.
I think one of the, there's fortunate things and unfortunate things that came out of the Nicole Brown Simpson case. That was the case, obviously, that really kicked off the whole area of domestic violence awareness.
Even while he's not convicted. I love that.
Right, exactly. Well,
good job, guys.
And of course, of course that got the...
Murder's fine, but don't touch your friends.
that got the attention of a lot of people in domestic violence community. So they put a lot of kind of protections in place. They enhance the statutes so that really any sort of use of, quote, force and violence now qualifies as domestic battery. That means a push. A lot of people don't understand that. If you are having an argument with a spouse, you've had enough, and you decide that you're going to push them out of the way, and they call the police, and the so-called victim, the alleged victim, reports that he pushed me out of the way, that person is going to jail as the initial aggressor. And by Nevada statute, if the police can determine that there is an initial aggressor, and that means really the person who's doing the damage.
Started the physical part, too.
Right, or who's doing the most damage. Mm-hmm. If it's an affray, which is basically a fight, but you didn't start it, but you're doing the damage, the police determine that you must go to the jail for 12 hours. That's Nevada statute.
And I've had plenty of clients go to jail on that. And a lot of times they'll kind of push their wife out of the way, like you said, but not with their hands. Like they'll shove past her if she's in the doorway, for example, kind of shoulder check, or just try to squish past her.
Right.
And she's drunk, so she'll fall and she'll get hurt because she fell. And then that's the police come and they have to decide, was it his push that made you fall? Is it because you're a hammered, you know, little tramp that you fell over your own high heel? Like what caused you to fall into the wall? So
And, you know, the police are in the position where they're just not going to make that determination. The statute flatly says if you can find an initial aggressor, you have to arrest them. And I think that's just the easiest way to go.
And they want to break it up, because if they leave those two, it's going to go on again.
Right.
We're going to come back right after the break and we'll go through the list of things that qualify as domestic violence, the actual acts, because it's, again, a very surprising and broad list. Thanks for listening. We'll be back after the break.
You may love his politics or not so much, but he'll let you talk about it. Michael Smerconish, weekday mornings at 10 on Fox News Radio 1270.
Have you ever seen a square foot? Well, we've got 8,800 of them, and they're all fun. We're Junkie, 8,800 square feet of pure fun, because it's fun to save money and it's fun to shop at Junkie. Got a theme party coming up? We can help you pull it all together. We've got the right look for your roaring 20s theme party. Been invited to a disco party? Need to look like Madonna or Cyndi Lauper? No problem. Our 80s gear is totally rad. Junkie has clothes for every kind of theme party. And Junkie can save you money on clothes for work, clothes for play, and clothes that are priced so low they just satisfy your urge to shop. You don't have to spend a lot to have a lot of fun. Some of our square feet are devoted to affordable retro furniture and vintage style home decor. You can decorate your home in a unique way at Junkie's Antique Mall. We also have tons of one-of-a-kind jewelry. So for affordable parties, clothes, accessories, retro furniture, and antiques, Junkie's the fun place to shop. Now we'll get serious and tell you where we're located. We're in the big brick building between Vassar and California on Virginia Street. Junkie is obviously the fun place to shop.
If you've never visited the Wild Horse Saloon, you need to come out and visit. It's Nevada's most unique saloon with great food, great libations, amazing entertainment 24 hours a day. What kind of entertainment, you ask? Well, the Wild Horse Saloon has brought back live burlesque shows, with new shows starting every hour, 24 hours a day, with different entertainers every hour. No show is ever the same twice. So come to the Wild Horse. Throw your legs over the saddle. We have actual Western saddle bar stools. And order a cold beer. The Wild Horse Saloon is the place to go and let your hair down. Just have fun. We have fabulous food with everything from pizzas and wings to hamburgers and steaks. We're a huge lunch spot from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and we serve our full food menu until 10 at night and hors d'oeuvres the rest of the night. I'm Susan Austin, and I'm personally inviting you to come out and see us at the Wild Horse Saloon. Take I-80 East to exit 28. It's just 15 minutes from downtown Reno. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit. See you soon.
I'm attorney Marilyn York, and my firm exclusively focuses on men's rights in divorce, child custody, and family law matters. I hate advertising. If I'm being honest, I hate it more than anything. Why should you believe anything I have to say about myself? I'm in the best position to say great things about myself, but you don't know me, and there's no reason for you to trust me. So I'm going to ask you to do one thing. If you need help in family law matters, please ask two people in a town of this size, and you should be able to hear my name. I've been doing this for over 11 years exclusively, and if you can't ask two people you trust about me and hear good things, then I'm not the right attorney for you. On the other hand, I believe you will hear good things about us, and when you do, then we're the law firm for you. At a minimum, you will need legal advice when going through something like this, and you may need representation. Again, this is Marilyn York. Please call us at 324-7979. That's 324-7979. Or visit us on the web at marilynyork.net, not com, marilynyork.net.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Nobody else I know has been there.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan. I had been so excited to come home.
But it's harder than I thought.
Not everyone understands that.
Things at home may be as you left them.
But you don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org.
And connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps rolling on down to San Antone.
You're back on the Marilyn York Show, and we have former prosecutor and criminal defense attorney Tammy Riggs in the studio to talk about criminal law and the certain areas that overlap with family law or not. We were talking about domestic violence and acts which constitute domestic violence before the break. The call-in number, so you have it handy, is 823-1920. So acts which constitute domestic violence, we touched on battery. Legally, Tammy, what is the actual definition of battery so people understand how easy it is to commit one of these sort of acts?
Battery means any, under the statute, any willful and unlawful use of force or violence upon the person of another. Just people have to understand that the statute doesn't indicate how hard somebody has to be hit before it constitutes battery.
Or even that it has to be their hand or their person.
Oh, no.
Like you can throw a towel at someone.
Absolutely.
And violate the statute.
You can throw an object at somebody. You can hit them with a door on your way out. You can bump them. There's all kinds of ways, 100 ways to commit a battery.
I remember in law school, the favorite case was somebody had like a cane and someone kicked the cane out from underneath them or their crutch, and that absolutely constituted a battery, even though they had no actual touch with the person.
Right, contact with an extension of your person. So if you have a piece of paper in your hand and somebody grabs it out, that can be a battery.
Yeah, and that's a favorite move at custody exchanges. Grabbing the backpack out of the hand or grabbing the car seat away from the other person, something that belongs to the kid, that is a favorite move. So knock it off. So under the statute, other acts which constitute domestic violence are an assault. So what is an assault now, Tammy? Because I know that definition kind of changed.
Yeah, an assault under Nevada law used to be an attempted battery, but a few legislatures ago, the legislature changed the definition to the traditional definition, which is putting someone in fear of force and violence. So if you're in front of somebody and you take a swing at them and don't hit them, that's an assault.
Even a threat, though, like I'm going to kill you or I'm going to hit you, doesn't that constitute? I don't know if they prosecute it, but I think...
It can if that person is in reasonable fear. It depends if you're standing 20 feet away from somebody with your hands on your hip saying, I'm going to kill you. That's a different situation than if you're 2 feet in front of them with your hand on your gun or a knife saying, I'm going to kill you. The second being an absolute assault, the first one being more questionable. It's sort of shades of gray.
So it's like a reasonable person standard, correct? That right. They have to use it from, not some paranoid girl that happens to have been a victim before that might flinch every time she walks by a male.
Right, which is not to say that case might not show up in court. It's just the DA's discretion whether they're going to charge it and proceed on it.
Well, and in a civil arena, in order to get a restraining order, you basically have to show that either on a verified application that an act of domestic violence has occurred or there exists a threat of domestic violence. And this is the big catch-all that every, you know, one of my TPOs seems to fall within, with rare exception, where his behavior is escalating. This is the favorite quote. I'm worried about what he might do,
sure,
particularly if I serve him with the, you know, divorce. And I completely agree with the idea of keeping two married people somewhat apart or somewhat controlling their behaviors with some court-sanctioned instructions. But I don't like restraining orders because of the impact it has on people. I wish there was some sort of instantaneous mechanism in the divorce case that was less stigmatizing to kind of de-escalate a situation that could get out of hand.
I think also with some TPOs, even if you show up with a client and you're trying to, in the case of an extended protective order where the defendant actually has a right to be there, you have a situation where the judge wants to err on the side of caution. Even if
sure,
you present evidence that, you know, my client did not do these acts that he's accused of, or she's overstating it, she overstated in her temporary protective mm-hmm. order application, the judge just wants to err on the side of caution. But as you said, it still has the effect of stigmatizing your client if
yeah.
they have that issued against them. And they also have some collateral consequences that go along with those protective orders. For instance, you can't possess or carry a gun during that time, which is a huge issue for a lot of people in Nevada, obviously, around hunting season.
Yeah, Tammy and I were talking yesterday getting ready for the show, and we were laughing because I told her October's hunting season. I know this from my husband, and I'll get a guy that gets like a deer tag and he's been waiting 8 years, or an elk tag, and he'll come in and he's like, oh, damn it, my wife totally applied for restraining order knowing I have an elk tag. And I swear it's so funny because it makes me laugh. Because I'm thinking, like, she's probably been a hunting widow all this time. And she's like, finally, like, I'm going to get him back for stupid hunting. Because they go hunting for like 2 weeks. And she'll get a restraining order and he can't carry a gun. And he's like, I can't use my elk tag. So it is a retaliatory method. And so made me laugh. But she's correct. You can't carry a gun the whole time it's in effect. And the extended restraining order is often and usually granted for a period of 1 year. So
right.
if you're an avid hunter or just someone that needs protection for some reason or another, or you like to shoot for a hobby, whatever, you can't carry a gun. If you're in law enforcement or you're a military person, it's particularly, you know, a significant issue, except that my understanding is typically law enforcement and military personnel will just have to check their gun in and out. When they're on active duty, they use their weapon. And when they leave, you know, for the workday, then they check it inside.
And my experience, unfortunately, is many people just have to give up their jobs. I have a client who is a security guard who, when the extended protective order was reported to his employer, he did actually lose his job. So it does
particularly if they teach. I've had a few clients that are actually, you know, they teach a course on domestic violence training or a police gun use training, and they lose that promotion when they can't carry a gun. And it's ridiculous. I mean, these women need the money that these men generate from this position. And if they are truly violent people and hurt their wives, they shouldn't carry a gun. I don't feel sorry for those. But I'm talking about the men in a situation where a woman says, I'm worried about what he might do. He's
sure.
mad. He's going to be mad mm-hmm. about the divorce. He's mad because I'm cheating. Whatever. That is not an instance where you want your husband to lose his job and therefore his income to support you and your children. Alex, we have a call on line one. Let's talk to Alex. Alex, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
What's your question or comment?
In 2008, I had a TPO hearing, and I was able to convince the domestic master that I wasn't a threat. But like you said, they still like to create some sort of buffer of protection at the very minimum. So she issued the extended protective order for 3 months instead of a year.
The favorite.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, I didn't know this then, but would it have worked if I would have asked the domestic master to alternatively issue a no contact order because of the whole gun ban thing you just talked about? That wouldn't ban me from having a gun if she would have done that.
Unfortunately, Alex, the court that you were in front of, the restraining order court, is a court master, and she does not have jurisdiction to do that. So the only way to do that is through cooperation of the two parties involved and attorneys to do it in a divorce case. So I don't know if this was a person you were married to, but if not, you'd have to get it in front of a civil court under like a paternity action in the civil court. And our civil courts are happy to do it, but they usually require an agreement of the so-called victim. And if they're feeling like being mean to you, they won't agree.
That's so exactly the issue I had. The other question I had is, what if I did happen to just take the order the domestic master gave me, but object to it, and then when it came to the district judge, maybe do you think it would have been possible for him to have altered it? Because my ex was not going to agree to anything.
Were you married to your ex?
No, I was not.
Formerly?
Married.
Do you have kids with your ex?
I do. That's actually the whole custody case.
Oh, okay.
In the end, I was able to prevail in the case, but it took a very long time.
So the answer is yes. If you had filed an objection, you have to do it within 10 days to the restraining order issued. And I do that in almost all of my cases where they're random, because you get in front of a district court judge, presumably the judge that hears your custody case, pretty quickly and pretty inexpensively. And because they are the district court judge, they then have the authority to enter an order in your other civil action. In your case, it would be a paternity action with your children. And they often do, and they offer that, and they sort of encourage mom to agree to that. And they stay in effect longer. So there's some benefits to her. They typically won't make those one-sided. That's the other benefit to you. They're almost always mutual when they do it in the civil case. So they'll say neither one of you can go within 100 yards of the other one's home, because it's not usually one person showing up that causes the problems. It's both of you that need to be sort of under the same rules. You know, you have to communicate only by text or email in writing so we can read your communications, phone only in the event of emergency, those sort of things. It's pretty standard. So the answer is yes, they could have done that. And they probably would have done that, particularly in your case where it was so mild that even the tough masters thought an extension of 3 months was the most appropriate.
Okay, and the last question I had is, you mentioned that you had a lot of experience with, I guess, 50% where restraining orders would come up. How much experience have you had with the restraining order person getting a fictitious address? I currently have a case against the Secretary of State in Falcone versus the Secretary of State of the State of Nevada, which has gone to the Supreme Court.
I've had no experience with it except just recently looking up the concept. And actually, we were going to talk about that on the show today with Tammy, because there is a statute that allows the Secretary of State to issue not just a fictitious address, but I believe also a fictitious social security number, for whatever that's worth, for victims of domestic violence. And I know the statute on its face requires, in order to meet the threshold, that they attach some proof that they've been victims of domestic violence. And they have to actually have been a victim of an act of domestic violence against them in the Secretary of State's requirement. But to do that, they can attach a restraining order, or they can attach, obviously, a criminal conviction. The difference is you can get a restraining order in Nevada because of a threat of domestic violence, but you aren't supposed to be able to get a fictitious address just because of a threat. It has to be an actual victim of an actual act. And I don't know how yours was applied, but in your instance, based on what you're telling me, they should not have given your ex a fictitious address because she was not a victim of domestic violence, just the alleged threat or potential for it. So it sounds like you are appealing it. Is that correct?
Yes, they absolutely even admitted to issuing the fictitious address on the mere issuance of the domestic order. They mentioned absolutely nothing behind the substance of such orders whatsoever.
And that's not what it's for, especially if you have custody or joint custody. I think that every parent has a right to know where their kids are half of the time or all of the time, depending on the custody situation. So I hope that you're successful in that appeal. Please let us know, because that's an interesting case. I'm sorry that it's going this far. She needs a new hobby. I would guess your ex doesn't work, because this level of vindictiveness takes a lot of time. It's like a full-time job.
You have no idea.
I wish I didn't, Alex, but I do. Well, good luck to you, and let me know how that turns out. Thanks for calling in. So the other things that qualify for domestic violence, Tammy, are, besides an assault, are strangely, one of the things that I have clients get in trouble for all the time in the TPO arena is a false imprisonment. And that's basically just blocking the door. It's every spouse's trick. I mean, I know I've done it where I'm talking to my husband and he wants to leave the room and we're in a fight. And I say, no, sit down. Don't leave the room. I'm, you know, right in the middle of it because you're pissed. Like, how dare you walk out when I'm talking to you? So I'll stand in the doorway. Could he get past me? Yeah, because I'm a dumb girl and he's giant. But in a man's case, if he's in the way, I'm not going to try to get past him usually. And he didn't try to get past me most of the time because, you know, they actually care enough to sit still and they don't want to touch you either. He's going to have to push past me and he doesn't want to do that. But this is a common marital, you know, sort of thing that we do to one another. And it's always acceptable in the marriage, or not always acceptable, but it's commonplace and not a big deal until suddenly, you know, it's divorce time and then they file for a restraining order. When we come back from the break, we'll talk about whether these get prosecuted, because I'm interested from her perspective if Tammy's ever seen people get prosecuted for false imprisonment and if factually it needs to be a more of a severe case in that instance. We'll be right back after the break.
Who's on your Schnitt list? Todd Schnitt's list is growing every day. Listen live weekdays at noon. The Schnitt Show, Fox News Radio 1270.
There's a piece of Nevada's history just 15 minutes from downtown Reno, the legendary Mustang Ranch Museum, Nevada's first legal bordello. Learn about owner Joe Conforti, where he went sideways with the feds over taxes, and they ended up owning and operating the Mustang Ranch. Take a walk down memory lane with Joe and Sally. See where they lived while they worked. You can see the Rolling Stone magazine cover featuring Joe and his ladies, among other original magazine covers. The Mustang Ranch Museum runs tours from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for groups large and small, Monday through Saturday. If you have a large group, please book in advance by calling 775-343-1424. Walk-ins are welcome, too. Tours cost $5. Plus, we have a wonderful gift shop with T-shirts, shot glasses, baseball caps, and the largest selection of Native American jewelry. Take I-80 East, exit 28, 15 minutes from downtown. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit, and that's where you'll find us. If you've never visited the Wild Horse Saloon, you need to come out and visit. It's Nevada's most unique saloon with great food, great libations, amazing entertainment 24 hours a day. What kind of entertainment, you ask? Well, the Wild Horse Saloon has brought back live burlesque shows, with new shows starting every hour, 24 hours a day, with different entertainers every hour. No show is ever the same twice. So come to the Wild Horse. Throw your legs over the saddle. We have actual Western saddle bar stools. And order a cold beer. The Wild Horse Saloon is the place to go and let your hair down. Just have fun. We have fabulous food with everything from pizzas and wings to hamburgers and steaks. We're a huge lunch spot from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and we serve our full food menu until 10 at night and hors d'oeuvres the rest of the night. I'm Susan Austin and I'm personally inviting you to come out and see us at the Wild Horse Saloon. Take I-80 East to exit 28. It's just 15 minutes from downtown Reno. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit. See you soon.
Have you ever seen a square foot? Well, we've got 8,800 of them, and they're all fun. We're Junkie, 8,800 square feet of pure fun, because it's fun to save money, and it's fun to shop at Junkie. Got a theme party coming up? We can help you pull it all together. We've got the right look for your roaring 20s theme party. Been invited to a disco party? Need to look like Madonna or Cyndi Lauper? No problem. Our 80s gear is totally rad. Junkie has clothes for every kind of theme party. And Junkie can save you money on clothes for work, clothes for play, and clothes that are priced so low they just satisfy your urge to shop. You don't have to spend a lot to have a lot of fun. Some of our square feet are devoted to affordable retro furniture and vintage style home decor. You can decorate your home in a unique way at Junkie's Antique Mall. We also have tons of one-of-a-kind jewelry. So for affordable parties, clothes, accessories, retro furniture, and antiques, Junkie's the fun place to shop. Now we'll get serious and tell you where we're located. We're in the big brick building between Vassar and California on Virginia Street. Junkie is obviously the fun place to shop.
You know you want to quit smoking. Well, you can do it in just a few steps. All you need is a little motivation.
Get ready.
First, set a date to quit.
Get medicine.
Talk to your doctor about medicines that can help you.
Get help.
Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, a free service that can help you get started. Or go to ahrq.gov/consumer for more information about quitting.
You can quit smoking.
A few easy steps that'll help save your life. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Fox News Radio, 1270.
I lit out from Reno, I was trailed by 20 hounds. I didn't get to sleep that night till the morning came around. I set out running, but I take my time. A friend of the devil is a friend of mine. If I get home before daylight, I just might get some sleep tonight.
You're back on the Marilyn York Show, and we have former prosecutor and defense attorney Tammy Riggs in the studio. And Tammy, before we go off on false imprisonment, you were not finished, I believe, with your thoughts on the Nicole Brown Simpson effect on the domestic violence universe in the court system. What were you saying before we changed gears?
That's right. A lot of good and a lot, well, and some not so good came out of that case. What has been good is obviously the awareness to domestic violence. There are many women and men who are actual victims of domestic violence. And prior to that case, it was more difficult to prosecute a domestic violence case because the attitude was, frankly, it's only between a man and a woman, a husband and wife. It's nobody else's business. Since that time, obviously, we've seen that women and men, victims can suffer severe injuries over a long course of time, and that also has severe impacts on kids. So there are actual victims of domestic violence out there. What has come out of that is, for instance, at a Washoe County DA's office, they have what's called a victim witness assistance program, where victims are basically shuttled through the system with expert people who will explain what's going on, assist them in understanding the court process, and be their advocate. And so those kind of programs are good, in addition to the awareness. What I find to be not so good is one of the things that the Nevada legislature did was invoke mandatory prosecution. Once a prosecutor files a domestic battery charge, they may not dismiss it unless they absolutely think it cannot be proved beyond a reasonable doubt. That takes much discretion away from DAs. And what that has effect of, when a DA gets a case, they have the basic facts of what happened. Then they file the case, and then later they find out, well, you know, there's more than meets the eye. The victim is now backing out. She was drunk. Right. Oh, right. She was drunk. Yeah. She has a history.
She kicked him first, whatever.
All of this. So, but unless the DA finds that they absolutely can't put it on, then they must go forward. I think that kind of discretion belongs in the hands of the DA, and I think that was a mistake on the part of the legislature. I think that all of this tightening down also has had the effect on the players of moving to the side of being too conservative, judging, or moving to where they're erring on the side of caution rather than in a domestic violence criminal charge. As in any criminal charge, the prosecutor should be proving their case beyond a reasonable doubt. And I find that even in cases where that might not be the case, where you've presented, either you've impeached the victim on the stand, which means to catch them in inconsistencies, to try to prove reasonable doubt if you think you've done an effective job as a defense attorney, or put on evidence where, you know, this to show that she just might not be telling the truth. I find that if judges are stuck between a rock and a hard place, or if it's a close case, they will err on the side of caution and convict, which is an unfortunate thing.
Definitely. So before the break, we were talking about false imprisonment. Have you seen false imprisonment cases prosecuted? Is that something the DA prosecutes very often?
Yes. In the case of a false imprisonment, and it usually occurs exactly the way you've described, where there's some sort of pushing and shoving incident, and the person who's being charged has said something to the effect of, "Don't you leave," or grabbed a person to keep them from making a 911 phone call or from leaving. they end up with an actual false imprisonment charge, which is a separate charge from domestic battery and which is actually prosecuted as a gross misdemeanor. It's an additional charge to domestic battery. Now, my experience is that that's usually charged as a bargaining chip by the prosecutors, in which, if your client doesn't want to plead to the domestic battery, we'll go ahead to trial on the gross misdemeanor, which is it's punishable by a more severe penalty. It's punishable by an entire year in the Nevada State Prison and $2,000, a $2,000 fine, rather than the misdemeanor, which is maximum $1,000 fine and 6 months in Washoe County Jail, although that's not the standard penalty for domestic violence.
Which is unfortunate, because I think it's really common. I'm just thinking in my head, like, scenarios where husbands and wives get in these fights and she's like, I'm going to call the police. And he's like, don't call the police, grabs the phone or blocks the phone, like tries to de-escalate it. I don't agree, obviously, with blocking the phone in a truly violent situation. If someone needs to call the police, that's ridiculous and really scary, I'm sure.
It's also an additional crime to interrupt an emergency phone.
Yeah,
calls.
I've had my clients charged with it. I actually remember a case in particular. It was just dumb, except she kept saying, he threw the phone at me and broke it. And I said, well, I don't understand how you called 911 then if he broke the phone. And, oh, well, he just pulled the cord off. And I'm like, wait, don't you have a cordless phone? It was like the weird. And then she got caught lying. So anyway, it was just funny, because who has corded phones these days? Nobody. It was just whatever, random thought. So other things that fall in the statute that they use in the TPO system are a knowing, purposeful, and reckless course of conduct intended to harass the other, as if this is somehow different than just being a normal spouse. Are you kidding me? That's what all spouses do. I thought that's why my husband left the seat up. I think I'm going to have him charged with domestic battery for leaving the seat up every day, particularly when I was pregnant and I got a, offensive touching by toilet water on the booty while pregnant. But anyway, it can include, but it's not limited to, stalking, arson, like who's lighting each other on fire. They deserve a little more than just a stupid restraining order. But trespassing, larceny, destruction of private property, a favorite female trick. Every man that comes to my office are like, what do you recommend I do? And I'm like, before you tell everyone to divorce, get all of your personal effects together that are irreplaceable. Wedding photos or photos of your dead mom, ring from your grandpa. That is the first thing women do, is destroy the irreplaceable personal sentimental items of a man. So I always have them take those out of the home and then they can start the war. So this is funny, because I've never actually seen a woman get a restraining order for destruction of private property, but I have for men. Carrying a concealed weapon without a permit, injuring or killing an animal, which means you're just a sick monkey anyway. But just interesting, because stalking, or just a pattern of like calling repetitively. I definitely have had clients where, you know, they'll serial call when they're in a fight, and then suddenly at divorce, it's a big deal. You get a restraining order, even though it's been a pattern in the marriage the whole time, and she'd be mad if he didn't. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll keep talking about these subjects and maybe get into the child abuse arena just briefly. The call-in number, so you guys have it, is 823-1920. If you want to call, we will be back right after the break. In the meantime, 960 South Virginia Street is where you should be spending your Saturday. It's Junkie Clothing Exchange, and they are open from 11 to 7 p.m. this evening, and also tomorrow from 11 to 7. If you guys need some cute, fun stuff, I know there's like an 80s party going on, I think tonight, at one of the local clubs. I don't know which one. You better get down to Junkie and get your outfit ready. We'll hear from you guys in just a moment.
There's a lot going on right here in Nevada. Rather than just hear about it, talk about it. 6 to 10 weekdays, Fox 1270 in the morning with Panama plus Don Gibbons.
If you've never visited the Wild Horse Saloon, you need to come out and visit. It's Nevada's most unique saloon, with great food, great libations, amazing entertainment 24 hours a day. What kind of entertainment, you ask? Well, the Wild Horse Saloon has brought back live burlesque shows, with new shows starting every hour, 24 hours a day, with different entertainers every hour. No show is ever the same twice. So come to the Wild Horse. Throw your legs over the saddle. We have actual Western saddle bar stools. And order a cold beer. The Wild Horse Saloon is the place to go and let your hair down. Just have fun. We have fabulous food, with everything from pizzas and wings to hamburgers and steaks. We're a huge lunch spot from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. and we serve our full food menu until 10 at night, and hors d'oeuvres the rest of the night. I'm Susan Austin, and I'm personally inviting you to come out and see us at the Wild Horse Saloon. Take I-80 East to exit 28. It's just 15 minutes from downtown Reno. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit. See you soon. There's a piece of Nevada's history just 15 minutes from downtown Reno, the legendary Mustang Ranch Museum, Nevada's first legal bordello. Learn about owner Joe Conforti, where he went sideways with the feds over taxes, and they ended up owning and operating the Mustang Ranch. Take a walk down memory lane with Joe and Sally. See where they lived while they worked. You can see the Rolling Stone magazine cover featuring Joe and his ladies, among other original magazine covers. The Mustang Ranch Museum runs tours from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for groups large and small, Monday through Saturday. If you have a large group, please book in advance by calling 775-343-1424. Walk-ins are welcome, too. Tours cost $5. Plus, we have a wonderful gift shop with T-shirts, shot glasses, baseball caps, and the largest selection of Native American jewelry. Take I-80 East, exit 28, 15 minutes from downtown. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit, and that's where you'll find us.
I'm attorney Marilyn York, and my firm exclusively focuses on men's rights in divorce, child custody, and family law matters. 90% of homeless and runaway children are from fatherless homes. 71% of all high school dropouts come from fatherless homes. These shocking statistics do go on and on. And yet, in the context of divorce and separation, 50% of mothers see no value in the father's continued contact with their children. 40% of mothers report that they have interfered with their father's visitation solely to punish their ex. We can help you protect your children from being a part of these statistics, even when their mothers won't. Our courts do care about you and your children. At a minimum, you need legal advice when you're going through something like this, and you may need representation. If you do, call me, Marilyn York, at 324-7979. That's 324-7979. Or visit our website at marilynyork.net.
If you've never visited the Wild Horse Saloon, you need to come out and visit. It's Nevada's most unique saloon with great food, great libations, amazing entertainment 24 hours a day. What kind of entertainment, you ask? Well, the Wild Horse Saloon has brought back live burlesque shows, with new shows starting every hour, 24 hours a day, with different entertainers every hour. No show is ever the same twice. So come to the Wild Horse. Throw your legs over the saddle. We have actual Western saddle bar stools, and order a cold beer. The Wild Horse Saloon is the place to go and let your hair down. Just have fun. We have fabulous food with everything from pizzas and wings to hamburgers and steaks. We're a huge lunch spot from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., and we serve our full food menu until 10 at night, and hors d'oeuvres the rest of the night. I'm Susan Austin, and I'm personally inviting you to come out and see us at the Wild Horse Saloon. Take I-80 East to exit 28. It's just 15 minutes from downtown Reno. Follow the signs to the Wild Horse Canyon from the exit. See you soon.
Fox 1270.
I had a gun pointed at my head on several occasions. Yeah, Nadine, I was scared. Something about a black man with a machine gun make you wish you said your prayers. It was Nigeria. The year was 1969. I was teaching criminology. Played a little guitar on the side.
You're back on the Marilyn York Show with guest Tammy Riggs, and we were talking about criminal law. I said we were going to talk about child abuse, which I want to talk about. But before we do, let's mention just quickly statutory rape, because this is a subject that comes up. Tammy and I both have kids in the same arena, too, in the teen world, and it is an issue. So legal age of consent in Nevada is 16, right?
Right.
Is that all circumstances? I don't quite know the law. So.
Well, it's... Any child who consents to sex who is over the age of 16, the person who has the sex with them can't be charged with what's called statutory sexual seduction. But the criminal penalties are different. If the person who is having sex with the person who is between 16 and 14 is between the ages of 18 and 21, it's a gross misdemeanor. Over the age of 21, it's charged as a felony.
I know I had a niece who was like 13 and a kid over 18 was having sex with her and was charged with, I guess it's just rape of a minor. Basically, it's no different under 14 if it's a 4-year-old or a 13-year-old, basically, at that point, legally speaking. I don't know that they prosecuted it. I don't think they did, but it's right. Like a 5 to 20 year sentence, gentlemen. So if you pick your girlfriend up at Swope and you're over 18, you're going to prison, not jail, you morons.
Right.
Even if she has big boobs. There's no big boobs statutory exception, turns out.
Yeah, sexual assault on a child is is imprisonable by life. So it's and also what people don't understand is there's also the charge of lewdness on a child under 14, and that is an offensive sexual touching of a child, and that will also get you 10 to life. So it's very very serious charge. It's more serious than most people think.
There's no consent options. No. There's no lying.
Consent is not
either.
A defense. Consent is not also not a defense to, or knowledge actually is not a defense to statutory sexual seduction. So if you want to say, I didn't know she was 15, that's not going to work because it's what's called a strict liability crime. You did it, you're guilty.
Yeah, you need to figure this out on your own. And again, if you pick them up from SWOPE, or Pine Middle School, they are not over 13, you geniuses, unless they're just dumb and they keep failing. So I don't know if you want to be with that girl anyway.
Right. And you should also know that there's collateral consequences that go along with those crimes. It would be a lifetime supervision by the Division of Parole and Probation, lifetime registration as a sex offender wherever you go.
Yeah. So let's knock it off. Boys, Facebook is not an exception to sleeping with children either. So on child abuse, I have many clients who get accused of this, of course, and I'm thinking the physical abuse, not the sexual abuse. And so I've talked to numerous CPS workers and they sort of define it as like one open-handed swat on the bottom is okay. Like there's nothing illegal about corporal punishment, but don't leave a mark and don't hit them excessively or more than once. And of course, it depends on a kid. We've already discussed this. Some kids mark more than other kids and that sort of thing. What is your experience, Tammy, with regard to interviews with CPS? Because that's one thing that happens often, and it's such a quick act, and they immediately stop your visitation and custody as it stands in the court order. And so I'm usually in a big hurry, like, just get in there and talk to CPS if you haven't done anything so we can get this resolved and you can get back to seeing your kid. But when do you advise that they bring a lawyer into the mix?
I would advise anybody who thinks they might or has the potential for having a criminal charge, a child abuse, child domestic battery charge, to consult an attorney before you have that conversation with CPS. Here's the problem, is that in a criminal case, you have an absolute right not to testify against yourself, not to give information against yourself to a police officer. Well, CPS comes in and their role is not to prosecute you or to be involved in the criminal charge. However, they can pass what you say, and they do pass what you say on to either the police authority who might be considering a charge against you or the prosecutor if that charge actually goes forward. So it's very, I advise people to be very cautious when they speak to CPS, but normally my experience with most social workers is that they do have common sense when it comes to these things. They're not going to be, they're going to be very careful with what they report back to the CPS. So if you, long story short, if you tell your CPS worker, yes, I punched my child in the face, expect that to get in front of the prosecutor.
As it should.
Yes.
If you punch your child in the face, unless they're teenagers, and then there should be like a little side exception. They have braces. They bleed easily. I've had that defense, actually. It's not funny, but it kind of was. I actually had a question on Facebook I wanted to ask you, too. It says, what if someone, a relative, starts breaking things, joint property? Can a person restrain them then? So without having a domestic battery charge, can you stop them from breaking your stuff?
You know, there is there's a limited exception or a defense of property exception, but you really, honestly, you're in trouble if you start using force to protect little things. I mean, if somebody is going to be committing an arson against your house, somebody is going to be you know, set
property
fire
over $500, which is the felony standard, isn't it?
$250.
Actually, $250. Oh, sweet. So there you go, Brian. If it's over $250 in value, or sentimental, like irreplaceable china, maybe.
My suggestion is to call the police, honestly, because it's just it's a mess that you don't want to get involved. It's an argument you don't want to get involved with. Normally, in most cases, violence is not allowed in defense of property, but it's absolutely allowed is self-defense against, you can use reasonable force against attack against yourself or somebody else. If somebody's destroying your property, the best thing to do is to call the police and let them handle it.
Tammy, what's your phone number for people that get DUIs over the weekend, which happens every weekend, I'm sure, and soon on 4th of July or other crimes?
Our phone number is area code 775-786-4788, and that is a 24-hour day number. You can reach somebody, just hang on the line and you'll be able to reach somebody. Not that I or Scott will be getting back to you at 1 a.m, but we certainly will handle it as soon as we possibly can.
Well, and that's important because criminal stuff by its nature is very important on a emergency basis,
sure.
Sometimes more so than family law. So that's great to know that you guys have that phone number. I appreciate you coming on the show. Do you have a website as well where people can get in touch or check out your services?
Yes, that would be defense-freeman.com. It's www.defense-freeman.com.
Sounds great. And if you guys want to get on my Facebook and see what the upcoming shows are, please do. You can also get on the MarilynYorkShow.com at any time and listen to old archive shows, including this one, as well as see what the current and future show lineup looks like. And let's not drink and drive, you geniuses. And if you have to hit your kids, don't leave a mark, okay? Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week with William O'Donohue about sex addiction.